Welcome to this media availability edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. The Hoosiers committed five errors and allowed three late unearned runs as they fell at home to number 18 Louisville on Tuesday. After that Tuesday night game, the media spoke with head coach Jeff Mercer. On Wednesday, following practice, the media met with Jake Stadler, Corbin Dickerson, and Jeff Mercer. You're in the middle of a homestand, and your team struggles defensively. Can you kind of talk about what you saw and what you're thinking right now?
Yeah, I mean, I just talked to the whole group. You know, we pitched it really well. It's frustrating that we made some of the kid mistakes that we make today. You know, that obviously the ears, but it's the way some of those things transpired that's frustrating. We're a better defensive team. We've been a better defensive team than that. You know, we have double steal. The second baseman's holding the guy on at second base. He has to hold him, break back to play defense, and then break to the plate. And we throw the ball. We have to throw the ball in the air to second base on the backside runner. We understand there's two double plus runners on the bases, and we bounce the ball to the second baseman. We don't throw the ball well between innings, and so you don't throw the ball well when the game starts. You know, you throw the ball in the center field, and you get a chopper to finish the inning, and you don't throw it with conviction to first base. And so you throw the ball away, next guy, it's a home run. And so those are things that we have the capabilities of doing. Those are just – you're just competing with conviction and going and finishing the game. And I get it, those guys are young, but at some point you have to take the next step and advance in the way you play the game. We did the same thing offensively. We take 1-1, get me over breaking balls. We take fastballs with two strikes. We take fastballs, get me over breaking balls. This guy's in scoring position. Like, just in the face of what you're taught how to do, it's just, that's what I told him. It's like, we have to advance in the way that we play from a fundamental standpoint. And when you're playing good teams, you don't get redos. You don't get do-overs when you have a really talented crew that's out there. And obviously they're doing, you know, the midweek stuff on the mound, but they're throwing a bunch of nice arms out there that are competitive and can throw multiple pitches. And so you don't just get do-overs and get me over. So, you know, that is the frustrating part where you come out. Yeah, I get it. You know, the Saturday game stinks. You're out of pitching on Saturday. You play three games, 24 hours. We're lined back up today. We pitch it really well. You give up two earned runs. And guys will go out there and compete with confidence on the mound. And you don't take care of the ball. And you don't take care of at-bats when given the opportunity to do that. And so that part is frustrating. And I realize we play, you know, four or five freshmen and a couple sophomores. I don't care. Those guys, it's just like they're just capable. They're capable. They've been taught that. And they've shown they can do that better than that. So that part, to your point, is frustrating from the standpoint that they've got the capabilities of doing a better job than that. And if you get beat, you get beat. But we were a very active participant in beating ourselves, and that part's frustrating.
Louisville's plan of attack today seemed to be a lot of slow lefties with really like 15-plus mile-an-hour difference in their curveballs. Yeah. Was that something that you guys were planning for earlier in the week and knew that was coming?
Yeah, we were hitting off. We were on Sunday. We were all left-handed machines and all left-handed stuff, and they've always got a bunch of lefties. Michigan State has a big lefty. So we were working on left-handed stuff on Sunday coming into today. And if you want to hit, if you're a left-handed hitter and you want to be able to hit lefties, you have to hit early. You have to hit the get-me-over stuff early. Or you have to be able to take the chase stuff late. You can't do neither. You can't take the get me over stuff early and then expand the zone late. It obviously doesn't work like that. So, yes, they always have a bunch of lefties. They recruit a bunch of lefties. Every left-handed pitcher in the Midwest, they're going to recruit them. And they always stack them up like that. So, yeah, we knew it going into it and understood what the task was going to be. And we just didn't execute it.
Coach, it was the second straight game your offense didn't produce a run after the fourth inning. I just want to know your overall thoughts on the offensive approach during today's game.
Yeah, I mean, I would, you know, kind of go back to that, you know, first statement there. It's like, it's hard to hit. It's hard to hit. I know that, and we all know that. It's hard to hit, especially when you're seeing a bunch of different guys, and you know, guys are good and they're executing, and all. It's hard to hit. So that's what I told him. I was like, you got two choices. I can either micromanage the game. You can tell them to sit counts and sit pitches, and I can, you know, signal in on the wristwatch, or I can signal in what you're going to sit and what count you're going to do, and I can tell you when to bunt and hit and run and do a bunch of things at all times. It stagnates the growth of a player for his long term and our team too, because you're an offensive unit's always better when they're in the moment and they're learning and adjusting and applying the approaches in real time, right? And so they're going to be better to do that. So I don't want to micromanage it. But if you're not going to go about and follow the plan and follow the approaches that are given, then you're forced to have to put your hands on the game, or I don't necessarily want to do that. So that would be my evaluation of that is just you're going to have to follow those plans. You're going to have good approaches. You have to have good swings in the good part of the field. They don't make mistakes in the middle of the plate, and you're going to have to work at it, right? You're going to have to really work at it. Even if you do it right, it's hard. Even if you do everything right, wind's blowing in, cold day, bunch of different arms, they're executing some pitches, they do a good job going fastball in late, which they always have executed for years. They've always executed fastball in late well, which really makes it hard when you're soft away and hard in late. It's a tough deal. And so when all those things are kind of against you as an offensive unit, you've got to be really tough and you've got to be dutiful. And if you're not, then you're gonna struggle to put up runs, unless they give you opportunity, which they did. Right, we scored four runs in one inning. I think they make an error. You know, KD doubles. They walk some guys. They give us opportunities. You know, they're in the ninth. They throw the first one away. They give us opportunities. We pop up on a, you know, first pitch. You know, fastball away with the guy on second base. We take a fastball away with bases loaded. We talked about, hey, let's. I know they're giving us a double steal. That's what I call time. They're giving us a double steal. Let's only if we can double steal with Devin up to get in scoring position. But I don't want to do it when KD's up, because I want the lefty to face the righty. I don't want to go left on left with the bases loaded. Then we get into a count and we double steal, and it's like they're giving us that so they can walk KD and face the lefty. You know, and again, I know you're talking to two freshmen who are trying to learn how to play the game. You know, and I understand that, but it's like. You've got to take the next step in those different areas when you play good teams that execute on a cold day. So we didn't do that.
Coach, you've also often referred to your teams as player-led teams. What's that looked like over the last week or so?
Hey, it's been good. You know, we come into this weekend playing good baseball. It's not good. We lose two games by combined three runs to two great teams. If you want to beat great teams, you have to play really good baseball. So, you know. There and I was firm. Like I'm not typically this firm. I'm not typically that firm with them. But those are things that are controllable. And so they're going to have to like take their medicine and hear the truth and hear the reality of it, and then go out and make an adjustment to go do that. So, I mean, you can fight with the wind and say, hey, well, he's not. You know, it's harder than that. But the reality is, you have to be able to. As a group, collectively look in the mirror and say, okay, we didn't execute very well today. We didn't take care of the ball, and we pitched it well, and we didn't give ourselves a chance to win because of what we did in the batter's box and what we did defensively. And so, yeah, like they'll be fine. I mean, I coach them all fall, coach them hard all fall. This isn't the first time I've been firm with them. It won't be the last time. And so it's just the way it goes. So, yeah, it needs to be player-led. If any good team, any really good team, is led by the guys that are on the field playing, it's just the reality. They don't give me a bat anymore. They don't give nobody. They shouldn't give me a glove because I was a terrible defender. So nobody should ever give me a glove. But Coach Glant's not going to go on the mound and pitch, and Coach Rutherford's not going to go on the outfield and track them down. So you, as a coach, you do your best to coach them and teach them. And sometimes I make mistakes like I did on Saturday. I own it. I'll walk out in front of the group and say, I made a mistake. I could have done better. But at the same time, when we don't do the things that we are capable of doing, they have to also hold that. And then make an adjustment too. So they'll be fine. They'll be fine. We'll practice hard the next 2 days and keep working on those things and get ready for this weekend.
Kind of building off of that, you wanted to pick your team off the campus on Saturday ahead of this one. Did you do anything different in these last couple of days to keep the team loose and keep them from tightening up after that kind of loss?
Well, I mean, Monday's an off day, so we practiced on Sunday. We came in and we got a bunch of left-handed stuff trying to get ready for today. Obviously the weather Sunday wasn't very good, so we worked a little bit. We did a bunch of bunting and cage work. They lifted and again, I always pride myself on showing up and be the same guy every day. So show up on Sunday, you're the same guy you were on Saturday before. You show up on Monday, it's an off day, but you just can't see the guys around. We had a really good BP, really hard work today in the pregame stuff, and you go out and you play. And so They're adults. They're adults. They're 18 to 22 years old. They're grown men. You know, they don't always need, you know, the, you know, back rubbed and pick up. Like, let's go play again, man. It didn't go our way. Sorry. on Saturday. But there's no, like I said, there's no invisible hand. There's no such thing as momentum. It's not a real thing. You just show back up and play. Nobody feels sorry for you. It happens across the country. Like, sometimes you kick one in a tough way. Like, okay, move on. Like, that's what's part of life. They're going to go, once they're done playing baseball, they're going to go into life and they're going to lose their job and have tough things and people get sick. And so it's life, you know. So you don't make it bigger than it is and you move on. But I do take pride on. I'm not very happy right now, but I'll wake up tomorrow morning and I'll be the same guy I was in. I'll smile on my face and I'll show up and we'll have a good practice. And you have a 24-hour rule and then you move on.
Good innings out of Kraft and Decker Petty there at the start. Obviously, didn't get the result you wanted. But how important was it to get that four-one lead for those guys and come back out and still pitch pretty well?
I mean, we gave up two earned runs to an offense that's hitting .324 as a team. Like, really good job, really good job. I think to your point, get up off the canvas. How about the pitching staff showing up on a Tuesday, 2 days after taking it on the chin and showing up and pitching their butts off? Like, that's getting up off the canvas. I mean, that's showing up and competing. That's executing pitches. So, I mean, yeah, you go out, you can take a 4-1 lead. You have a 2-run lead in the eighth. You have a long, battled, tough walk to the Moore kid, who's a great runner. You know he's going to run. And then we don't execute. And again, they can really bunt, and their lefties can really, really run. So it's a little bit different animal when the Moore kid or some of those different guys are laying down bunts and they're running 3-7s to first base. It's not just a bunt versus the shift. It's a bunt, and I'm faster than you can pick up the ball. So they had a great bunt down, and you're gonna get those opportunities to finish the game, and the defense is gonna have to do that. So yeah, I was thrilled with the pitching. They did what they've done. Those same guys that pitched really well, did a really good job. And so yeah, I think that's probably the statement of like getting up and competing. Did a really good job with that.
Kraft only went for two innings. Was the expectation for him to go short term, or did he want him to go a little longer?
Yeah, we wanted him back up for this weekend. You know, we want to piggyback those guys and get some different guys in. I thought ADP was fine. We wanted to get Brummel in. We wanted to get Rushing in. They walked their guys, and the next guy's up and ready to go. But Holderfield did a fine job, like he has, and Pete did a good job. I mean, you get your outs. He gets out of it. You get your outs against a good lineup. You eventually run out there and you have to get 4, 5, 6 outs, and eventually someone's going to tag him. So, yeah, we just wanted to open him up, getting back up for this weekend. We've got a ton of rain coming in, so I don't know what the game schedule is going to look like. We really just wanted to let's get it off the ground. Let's get him back in there and kind of spread the innings out over the week and then get the rest of those guys in the game and keep trying to grow up those young guys and give them opportunities to advance. But, Vogel was really good today. It was really good to see. It was a cold night, and grabbed a couple 91s or 92s, and he was good, so it was really good to see. So, that group has been a group that's been really good for us, and they were again tonight.
You mentioned Brummel and Rushing. Was the plan, even if they were to maybe get their guy and get that out, for them to throw one hitter, or
the walk ended it, but one or two guys and have the next guy up, and we talked about him before the game. It's like you got a guy, maybe two, but the next guy is going to get up with you and ready to come in right after that. Sometimes you got to make sure they understand, no matter what you do in that situation, the next guy's coming in. And so trying to break it up a little bit of a smaller way that way, because we do have coverage. We did have enough guys to have a more experienced guy right behind them. So, yeah, that was the plan all along. You want them to get their guy, but you got to get them in the game to help them to figure out how to be a more useful and competitive member of the staff.
So we might see more of that going forward with some of these guys.
It depends on if we can play a more typical schedule. If you've got again, not to harken it back, but if you're trying to cover 27 innings in 24 hours, you don't have the luxury of doing that, because that guy that's coming in to protect you is not, he's got to go 3 or 4 innings, and we don't have the leeway. If you're in a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, more of a typical. Haas can go on Friday one or two, and then Haas can go on Sunday one or two. So he could be a guy that covers Brummel, or covers Rushing, or covers Thomas. But, four of the last 5 weeks we've had doubleheaders on Fridays or doubleheader of some kind. So then you're kind of stuck, and you don't have the ability to do as much of that. But tonight was a day where we felt like we could do it. So, yes, and to answer your question more directly, in an ideal world, if we have a typical schedule with some coverage and length, then that's a way that we can get a guy in the game and still cover the innings that we have to cover. And then obviously getting, hopefully Grable's able to give us, something this weekend. You get Vogel. I think Yarberry's probably going to be up for an inning or two on Sunday. And so those guys could help to bridge that as well. But like we talked about, we need those young guys are capable of helping us. They're good enough. They're capable. They're talented. That's what we do. And we're just going to have to get them in there I don't want to use the word force, but really push them to get through it and get over it and compete. The only way to do that is to get them in the game in a real situation.
And late in the game, we saw Caleb Koski take one of his first at-bats and draw a walk, but pinch hitting for Andrew Wiggins. Yeah. Obviously, he's been struggling recently. Is that a signal towards anything coming this weekend, or
no.
Is the same expected?
Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll be fine, and I'll talk to him. I mean, I'm sure he's not thrilled about it, but it's the third time. I think they made pitching changes four times before his at-bats, or three times before his at-bats. They're going to another lefty, and it just felt like it was a better matchup in that particular situation. Andrew's a very good player. He's going to be a good player. He's still our guy. But at a certain point, you also have to try to play the matchup too. It's not a slight to Andrew. It's just, he's seen that multiple times today. We have one shot left at this thing. And you want to go to the righty. Obviously, they're going to the lefty to face Wiggins and Taylor. That's always the risk when you stack your lefties at the top. But, for the most part, they've been our higher on base guys. So you want to put those guys up top. And, so you also have to be willing to make an adjustment if you need to try to swing back into the advantage. I'm sure that guy was more comfortable versus lefties. Using a lefty, a lot of times lefties will use the lefty as a gauge to be able to throw their breaking ball for a strike. So I want to see a lefty. I'm going to throw my breaking ball at you as a target. And so sometimes when you don't have that target, they don't have the arm side adjustability, which is what happened with Koski. He walks on four pitches, and then that same guy is way better against Devin and Hanley. And so it's not a slight to Andrew as much as I'm not going to stand here and watch you and just play into your hand, which is your strength. A lefty with a left-handed hitter to use as a barometer to spin his breaking ball off his front shoulder in a double play situation or candidate. This isn't about me. You can see where the difference is between that guy's used to coming in facing lefties. You switch over to a righty, it makes him uncomfortable. And then you advance, and he was a lot less comfortable versus Dickerson as well, right? So it was just that. It's not a slight to Andrew. It's just you try to help your team win.
Jake, this season you've been able to actually kind of share the load a little bit with TJ. Can you kind of talk about the relationship you have with TJ and what you've done to help him along?
Yeah, so TJ's like a brother I never had. I mean, even all of our time off the field we spend together, and just getting to know him off the field I think has helped a lot, and that has helped him become a better catcher. I like to think of myself as a leader and kind of pave the way for him and show him how things are done and what you need to do to play at a high level, and I think he's taken keen to that, and he's done really well. So it's nice to have him back there.
Jake, a game like last night when you guys pitched it as well as you guys did, even though you didn't play, are you still watching that from a catcher's perspective, analyzing what those guys are doing on the mound?
Yeah, the pitchers, I mean, they pitched their behinds off yesterday. They did everything they could to keep us in that game, and it just comes down to us just taking care of the ball. And throughout the season, we've been good at that, and yesterday was just a one-off day, but we'll get it figured out.
What have you noticed about the pitchers as of late as they've gotten better, the outs have come more cleanly?
Yeah, it's like a confidence thing, I think. A lot of those guys are going up there knowing that they can get that hitter out and that their stuff is going to win. And just carrying that from guy to guy, I think, is really big for the pitching staff as a whole, just pitching with confidence and believing in yourself. And I try to give them belief from behind the plate, letting them know I'm with them every out of the game. And really, I think that's been the difference.
For either of you guys, Coach Mercer was talking about the inconsistencies at the plate. I guess, how do you kind of stay true to the philosophy the coaches are teaching you and just kind of finding more consistency?
Yeah, I think as a whole position player group, we just have to do a better job of sticking to our plan. We have extremely in-depth scouting reports before every game, and we have a plan that we're trying to attack with those pitchers as we go in the game. And sometimes our lineup is young, so I give our guys a little grace too. not making excuses for guys, but I think that sticking to the plan can be difficult at times for guys, especially against good pitching. We've been facing good pitching, and they've been pitching it well to us, so I think sticking to a plan is probably the biggest thing for us.
Yeah, Corbin, on that note, you've seen in the top half of the order, you've seen so many different arms, especially over the last two games with different matchups. Is it difficult seeing so many guys every few innings?
Absolutely. A game like yesterday where they staff it and you're seeing that guy for the first time ever in the box, it's extremely difficult to hit like that, but that is why we have those plans in place in the scouting reports. And if you don't stick to what they say, then it will come back to bite you.
Kind of going off that again, sometimes when Devin comes back after an at-bat, I see him talk to you, give you, is that sort of a little scouting report on the pitcher?
Yeah, we'll have the scouting report up in the dugout, but it's nothing like actually stepping in the box and seeing what the pitch actually looks like. So getting a little verbal from Dev as to what the fastball is flat or if the curveball is a good spin or whatever it is. Yeah, we'll just do a quick relay of that. We try to do that throughout the entire order, though. Yeah.
Jake, can you talk about more what it's like to train and practice with TJ?
Yeah, so I mean, a lot goes on behind the scenes, obviously. So we do a little bit more in the off season, but during the season, it's more just like during our practice days, we have like individual time. We'll, me, TJ, and Braden will do like some receiving and like catching stuff. But it's more of like a dialogue. Like when I'm watching him, like his rep, I'm giving him feedback, and same goes for me. If I'm up in the drill or whatever it is, he's giving me feedback on what he sees, and so it's a two-way street. So whatever he sees, he tells me, and vice versa. So,
Corbin, how was it playing against your former team yesterday? See a lot of guys?
Yeah, it was good to see those guys. I love all those guys. There's no hard feelings there. That's how they're in the locker room, just faceless opponents. We talk about it all the time. We're playing against the ball, not the other guys on the field. So, yeah, but it was good to see them again. Yeah.
Corbin, I guess Coach Mercer has talked a lot this season about how your mind, your intelligence has really led to this breakout season. What in your mind has led to your breakout campaign?
I think the consistent work every day and trusting the guys coming into a new program, you never know what it's going to be like. And I put all my faith into the coaches to get my swing in the place that it needed to be. And now I'm confident with it in the box. So I think the consistent work and just trusting the coaching staff are the two huge parts for me.
Corbin, now that you kind of have broken out and there's been several weeks, you know, of tape on you, have you noticed changes in how you've been pitched and how are you adapting to that?
Absolutely, yeah. I think UCLA was the first week in a row where I really got a real taste of the pitching change. They started going soft away a lot. I've been seeing a lot of cutters and sliders. But for me, just sticking to the reports that we have, because the scouting reports we have are so in-depth, and we watch a ton of video on the guys, so sticking to those plans and knowing that they might throw me a little different just because of the film. But I just try to stick with our plan, yeah.
Jake, you think about where you guys were at this point last year, kind of in a similar spot, middle of the road, then you went on a run. Do you see something similar to that happening this year, considering that you've experienced this at Indiana before?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all good teams go through adversity, and there wouldn't be, like, the story at the end of the year if there was no adversity. Nothing comes easy, especially in this game. And so knowing that we went through it last year, and I think not to say that we're comfortable where we are. Obviously, we want to do better. But knowing that the best baseball is yet to come is really exciting for me. So I'm looking forward to that.
To your point about the scouting reports being really in-depth, I guess both of you have been in different programs. Can you kind of give me like a frame of reference of how different the scouting reports are for hitters, like if they're like more advanced, things like that?
Yeah. It's kind of hard to describe without the paper, without looking at the paper. But basically, we'll have velos, spin, percentages and like in counts, what pitches they can throw in counts.
If you want to add, yeah, there's also like a heat map for like each pitch. It'll have like the location that he likes to go with it most of the time, and then like a percentage of like him throwing it for a strike or like the whiff percentage. So it can be overwhelming, but if you know what helps you best, like personally for me, I don't look at like all the stuff. I only look at like the heat maps and like the strike percentage, because for me, if I know where he's trying to go on the plate and then how often he throws it for a strike, that helps me a lot. And so those are the two that I look at the most. But, yeah, there's a ton of stuff on there.
Yeah, like for example, just to piggyback on him a little bit, I'll look at, like, pitch percentage. So say the guy's 80% fastball, 20% slider. Like, that's something that I want to look at. And then I also want to just see pitch velos. So each guy is different as to what they look at in the scouting report, but all the information that you look at.
Do you tend to notice that the fastball percentage tends to be lower for what you actually see versus what's on the report?
Yeah, so typically the fastball percentages that we have before going into the game, the opposing pitching staff typically changes that as the game goes on, yeah.
Anything about Michigan State this weekend? Are you guys all good? Michigan State's Friday guy is really good. He's experienced. I think he's one of the best pitchers in the conference. What's the game plan for him if the weather holds up and you guys actually get to face him?
I mean, just sticking to our plan. He's a good left-handed pitcher, and so a lot of our guys, left-handed hitters especially, we've seen a lot. We face a lot of left-handed, like, spin in our, like, drill work and stuff, and so kind of just seeing that left-on-left breaking ball with that fastball is really just what we've been focusing on, just trying to get repetition after repetition, just getting ready for that this weekend.
Yeah, I believe the Michigan State kid has a little similarity to the Penn State Friday starter that we faced earlier in the year. So I think maybe looking back at that a little bit will help some of our guys too with this kid this weekend.
Jake, defensively, five errors last night, obviously, for the team. How important is a day like today when it's nice outside, you guys can get out there, get some extra work in to help kind of remedy those issues?
Yeah, it's extremely important. Every time you can get on the field is a good day to practice, and today was another good day. After a night like yesterday, you kind of want to forget it, but it's also good to learn. And, like, what did we not do well? Like, how do we communicate better? And kind of things like that. And today we ironed some of those things out. We should be good to go.
You mentioned about preparing for lefty starter. You got a big lefty starter you're facing. Yeah. What I actually want to ask about is what have you been working on as far as how to deal with that first pitching change and how your hitters are going to respond after – You've done with the guy that you've been working on so hard with.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. We had a hitters meeting today. I think there's a couple of things that happened to us offensively. One, I think that we can become so we have a really specific approach system that we'll use, right? And so I talked to him today about sometimes it looks like we can't get out, and sometimes it looks like we can't get a hit, right? And when we apply it correctly, we should work against anybody that we face. And when we don't, it won't work against anybody unless there's multiple mistake pitches in the middle of the plate later in the at-bat. So sometimes we can become a little too reliant on additional mistakes. And so that happens, you know, later in the weekend, you know, Saturday or Sunday, or sometimes a midweek where you can get later in the game and okay, so I got runners in scoring position. I take an 0-0 breaking ball up and over the middle. Well, there are times later in the weekend where you can get away with that. And then when you're facing a good arm, you don't. And so going back through and reminding them of, like, what the plan is, how we attack the plan, why we have success and why we don't. And reminding them that the alternative option to teaching somebody how to really have an at-bat is, you know, guys have their wrist watches, and they'll tell them what pitches to sit, and they'll tell them what count to sit, and so you can do that. And as a coach, sometimes it will work. You can have some instant success with that. But when you get later in the season, you're trying to play at a high level, or if, you know, you're trying to play postseason baseball, or they go to the next level. If you never teach them how to play, then they're not able to be self sufficient. And an offense is better when everyone is. Not on their own plan, but on a unique plan. It's the same identity, but different variations, because what I do well is different what this guy does well. So I think the big thing is when the pitcher changes is being prepared to apply the approach that I need to apply to him immediately, and not being reliant on additional mistakes or not being reliant on them to give it to us, but you have to fight through the at-bat to get to a good pitch to hit and then put a good swing on it. So that, I would say, that being the main identity of it is like, we have to do really well what we do really well. And when we face somebody that makes mistakes and we get extra mistakes, you can't just assume the next guy is going to do that. So you knock a guy out, he ran out of gas, he started making mistakes, whatever, he walked guys, and then the next guy comes in. You have to go back to that core philosophy and approach to attack that guy the way that you are supposed to. And not just assume that you'll get give-me's or mistakes or do-overs again. I think that's what happens to us is we don't always do a good job of directly applying that plan to the next guy from the beginning of it. And so you get caught a little bit in between, and you don't finish innings. Pitching changes, as your point, have been effective against us. And I think it's not they're not capable of it. It's a misapplication in the moment of how do we attack this guy differently. And you know, again, I can micromanage to a degree with that, but it doesn't in the long run help them to learn how to play the way that when we're good and we're playing at a high level, just because that system works, and we just have to apply it the right way.
To that point, has it been an issue of kind of getting this philosophy and that approach across, or is it more just like a lack of execution?
Well, I think with any time you're working with players, is there's got to be a constant reminder of that. And so there's so many moving pieces. You get in the middle of the season, you're moving games, your guys are injured, you have different guys in the lineup, you have a bunch of young guys. And so there has to be a reminder to it. Let's remember what we're doing and how we do it. There's got to be constant, you're going back to the basic, you're going back to the core philosophy of it. So I would say that the system that we've run for, the way we've run it now, it's probably for 4 years now, and it's worked really well. It just has to be applied correctly. And so you're teaching the next iteration of guys that plan. And when you're teaching the next iteration of guys that plan, sometimes there's some ebb and flow. So you need your older guys to be able to be committed to that and stay to it and be good leaders with that and show how it's done. And so when they don't, then it doesn't set the tone the way you want from those young guys. But a lot of times it's just a misapplication, or you have to be reminded of what it is again and again. But that's with all of us, right? We don't fill out our paperwork after 2 months of filling it out. You need a reminder, right? Don't forget, fill out your paperwork. It's just human nature. So you have to be reminded. We have to get back in there. There has to be a repercussion and this is why it's so important. And the repercussion is failure. And this is what directly led to this. So you have to watch the video, you have to have the conversation, you have to reapply it over and over and over again. But that's with all of us. That's where people and we're quick to forget.
Wanted to ask a follow-up on something I asked last night about the player-led group. Right. Who have you noticed so far this season that's kind of stepped up individually in the clubhouse and locker room to kind of lead the guys?
I think the pitching group has a bunch of those guys. I think those guys are... I think Carl, you ask about, 70% of your innings are from, juniors and seniors on the mound. And so, and it stinks that Drew's out right now, but Drew and Kraft and Holderfield and Grable and Gilly and Siebold and those guys are really good. And those guys are able to really help to kind of hold the line on that stuff. DeMar's been a really good presence in the position player room. And that was a big part of him coming to the program, was to help and to have some accountability, knowing there was going to be a ton of turnover with the position player group. Devin has great experience and intelligence. He's a quieter guy, but there's a veteran presence with him in there. I think Joey B does a really good job of being a professional all the time. And we've kind of gone to a little bit of Hogan versus the lefty and then Joey versus the righty. And then once Joey's in, he kind of stays in typically for his right-handed at-bats, but I think Hogan's probably a little bit better right-handed than Joey is, although Joey's a good right-handed hitter. I would say those couple of guys have done a good job with that. But again, you got three freshmen in the infield and two sophomores in the outfield, and then your DH is kind of a rotation of guys. So, there's not a plethora of in-game experience as far as this is how this is done. And so there's not as many guys that are really able to step forward and say, hey, this is how it's done as far as from a leadership standpoint. And so a lot of it's underneath and one-off meetings and conversations and teaching guys how to lead and how to communicate and how to hold themselves to that standard. That it's just and not that I'm terribly old, but, it's just it's a generational thing, too. It's, holding each other to that is a little bit less comfortable at times than it maybe was 10 or 15 years ago. So that's okay. That means as a coach, you have to be more communicative and you have to take on a larger role and helping guys to understand, what that looks like and how to play the game at this level. The youth baseball model is different. Not that it's right or wrong. It's just different as far as guys playing for different teams where their team changes so much, where there's not always that group that stays together from the time they're 12 to 18, and you kind of learn how to hold each other, accountable and communicate and do those things. So some of that you have to teach and communicate, and some of that is some youthfulness to it as well. So I think there's a combination of pieces to it. The good thing is that from an offensive standpoint, we've worked really hard to kind of build a system to where you always have something to rely back on. You know, I think in the hard times, what makes it really hard is when you don't necessarily know what to go back to. Is there a core philosophy that you believe in that has worked and tried and true? And we do. And so to be able to go back and say, all right, let's remember this is what we do well. This is how we do it. This is how we apply it. This is why it works, I think, gives confidence to be able to know I've got that safety underneath me that I know I can go back to. So hopefully that helps to provide leadership to be able to say, hey, it's not just you have to play 1,000 games to figure it out. It's kind of like, hey, here's the cliff notes. Just go back and study for the test, and then you as a young player can do it as well.
When we talked about Devin in the preseason, a lot of it, I think you said, was about simplifying things, just not trying to do too much. Yeah. At this point in the season, how far do you think he's coming in that? Is there more to improve from like his mental aspect of the game?
I think he's done a good job. There's a lot that goes in, and I think he needs to make a few swing adjustments that he's been kind of talking about. I think he needs to stand up a little bit more. I think his bat gets too far behind him and too flat. So he's not as adjustable sometimes, especially the lefties. So he's working. I was just talking to him about it 2 minutes ago before I walked up here, just making sure because I saw him working on it and his swing looked a little bit different there, which was good. So I think from a mental standpoint, he's been in a good spot. He's doing a good job. His voice carries so much weight, and everything he says carries so much weight with everybody. And just helping him to know that and in a good way, right? Your words of encouragement go so far, right? In how you go about things go so far. He's a great kid, so that's never a cause of concern. But I think the big thing right now is just making a little bit of an adjustment in his presentation and his setup, I think would allow him to be a little bit more adjustable. And, you know, that's coming from a guy that's playing really well, you know, but he's capable of playing really well and fine-tuning along as he goes. But I think he's handled it as admirably. I think the first week or two was just – it was a lot, right? The whole operation was a lot. And since then, I think he's settled in and played well.
You look at the top of the lineup the last couple of years, started with Carter last year, then he slumped, you moved him down. This year, same kind of bat with Wiggins, power bat at the top, but he's kind of slumped. Is there a reason that maybe there hasn't been a change at the top of the lineup with it kind of going quiet with Wiggins at the top?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to give a guy a chance to work his way through things. And then you also have to look at who do you replace him with? And do you have somebody that you feel like is going to go in and do a better job of that? And secondly, does he fit in better in the lineup somewhere else? So does he fit in better in the middle to bottom half of the lineup as far as does he hit better with guys in scoring position? Is he ready to have more bats with guys on base? Or is he still better in a position of a leadoff or he's going to get maybe a few more pitches to hit early in the at-bat? So there's a lot of those things that go into it. As a coach, I've tried, like, usually early in the season, you kind of move guys around a little bit. But I liked in a lineup, when I showed up, I hit fifth or I hit fourth, and I knew that. And I could really hone my craft on doing that. And so once we've kind of settled in, I've usually tried to keep it moderately consistent, just so you can really hone your craft of what you're doing. And so that's the idea behind trying to, you know, you got hit 450 for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. And so sometimes you take it on the chin a little bit and they learn to pitch to you. Do you give a guy a chance to work his way through that and to make the adjustments that they've made to you? And does my coach believe that I'm still able to work my way through? And eventually, if you don't, yeah, you have to make an adjustment. But you're also then you're putting somebody else in a position they haven't been in before either. So you may get so you take a guy from the bottom of the lineup and you put him at the top because you're getting a really good product from him at the bottom. You put him at the top and now you change his at bat, and you may get a diminished return on that guy too. So you know, we've scored runs. I know we didn't score a bunch last night. We didn't score in the second half of that game against USC, but we've been moderately successful offensively. Certainly, when in consideration of who we've played. So I don't know that it's a cause to for sure make a change immediately. If it were to continue that way, then maybe you would discuss it. But Again, you, it's not just one for one. You're getting the same product from the bottom to the top or vice versa. Kind of the idea behind it.
Any else, Coach?
I guess in that same vein, working through the struggles with Jason Oliver, he kind of, you know, really struggled to start the year, and we haven't really seen a lot from him lately. Given what he did last year, is there a chance maybe he gets another shot? We saw him at third base a little bit during practice
today. Sure. Yeah, I mean, he and I have talked a ton, and yeah, there is. It's just where does it come from? Where does it go to? You know, does he? We're trying to get him. He played some third base this fall, and it wasn't super comfortable at third base in the fall, and so I told him that we would move some guys around. We'd open a little bit at second base, and eventually, if Cerny would go to second and be more comfortable there, and you know. Early returns are a mixed bag, that there would be an opportunity potentially to be more competitive at third base if that were the case. And so you got to give him some time to get comfortable there. But Will's also played really well. You know, he's gotten on base a ton. He's played good defense, and he had one go under him last night. But he's played good defense, taking care of the ball. He's on base a ton. And so then where exactly does he go into that? He's not comfortable shortstop. So if he's not comfortable short and he needs to be at second base and he's learning third base, then you're kind of going one-to-one with Cerny. And Cerny has swung the bat pretty well for the most part the last 3 or 4 weeks, and had played good defense. He had a few errors last night, but had played better defense there too. So, it's a conversation with him, trying to put him in a position to compete. I love Jason. I'm not mad at him whatsoever. And he's kind of working his way through it. But when we do live at-bats and we do different things and giving him an opportunity to go out and perform, he needs to go out and do that. And then, you know, if there's an opportunity to get him in, I'd be happy to do it as well.
Indiana continues the long homestand Friday at 6 p.m. That time is weather permitting, when Michigan State comes to Bart Kauffman Field for a 3-game series. See you at the Bart.